This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new Pirates of the Caribbean movie, Dead Men Tell No Tales. I'll also talk about Baywatch and The Lovers. There'll also be some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and the home cinema roundup featuring my life as a zucchini. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
It's been a rough week at the movies this week, and I'm not just talking about box office. I'm talking about some things that have happened behind the scenes. Now, we do have to say goodbye to Roger Moore, played, of course, James Bond for the longest amount of time. He's our first James Bond that has passed away. He died at 89 from cancer. I'm actually going to talk a little bit more about him in the next segment because I want to highlight him and in particular his work as James Bond. But another story that hit this week that's really heartbreaking is Zack Snyder, who has directed everything except the Wonder Woman movie in that sort of the DCEU, the DC Extended Universe. He actually has had to step back from doing the Justice League. After a family tragedy, apparently in March, his daughter committed suicide. And he's been dealing with that. He kept it secret for a couple months, and now it's come out that he's stepping back. He needs to deal with family issues, as he should. I don't care what you think of Zack Snyder as a filmmaker, as an action director. This takes precedence. When you have a family tragedy like this, you need to step back. And you need to take care of your own house first, because that's devastating. I can't even imagine the grief that he and his family is going through at this time. And the last thing you need is all the stress of finishing and releasing a major motion picture, the one that is so big on Warner Brothers' docket right now. And some news had hit earlier that Joss Whedon was going to come in and rewrite a couple scenes, add a couple bits of dialogue, and maybe even help, you know, sort of ghost direct a couple scenes, which I thought was an odd story when I heard that, because I thought it was odd they were going to Joss Whedon and not, you know, somebody else that's tied to DC, but also bring in such a key player at this point. And this does make sense now, because he's essentially, as I understand it, handing the reins of the movie over to Joss Whedon. And for all the franchises out there that talk about family, you know, stuff like the Fast and Furious franchise, which really heavily deals with family, or even the Guardians of the Galaxy, which also deals with family. Probably if there's any sort of modern ubiquitous theme to these movies, is family's important. And that's why it's right for Zack Snyder to step back, because you can't launch a movie like Justice League and deal with this. I mean, you pretty much have to be absent to do this, because you're constantly traveling, you're constantly doing interviews, and you're dealing with all the different landmines that keep just appearing along the way of a huge movie that's hundreds of millions of dollars. So Zack Snyder absolutely needs to take his time off. He has my sympathies, and I wish him the best. Now, with that said, as he goes on and does what he needs to do, I'm very curious to see what happens with the Justice League movie, because honestly, if I had to pick two directors who were stylistically polar opposites, it would be Zack Snyder and Joss Whedon. Zack Snyder is about style and about flash and about the action. Joss Whedon can do the action, but he's also about he's very much about the character interaction. And he's very tied to the comic books, and not just because he did the Avengers, but he had been working on comic books for years. So he understands how this stuff works. But his style and his approach is so different than Joss Whedon. I mean, that would be sort of like, I mean, this is an absurd one, but this would be like saying, oh, if the next Transformers movie, Michael Bay hands it over in the middle of production to like Wes Anderson. They're very different directors. So I'm curious to see where this goes and how much Joss Whedon preserves and how much of that gets preserved into the next Justice League movie, because there's a lot more that follows, and is Joss Whedon going to be kind of ahead of this at this point? You know, we'll see. And we'll also see what happens if Wonder Woman comes out next week, and we'll see how, just a different director dealing with it, how that changes the direction and the scope of the universe. But it's also for everybody out there who dreams of being a big filmmaker. These are the pressures you deal with. I mean, there's a reason why back in the 80s, George Lucas stepped away from Star Wars. And it wasn't just that he was annoyed with the characters. He lost a marriage over that. He had a heart attack over Star Wars. It's incredibly stressful and a lot of work to put together blockbuster movies. And it's easy to disappear from life. And if you spend 5 years working on a film series, you may come home and you may have kids you don't even recognize. So I wish Zack Snyder and his family the best in these horrible circumstances. I wish Joss Whedon the best. And I hope that he can make this work without being a jarring change between two different director styles. And I think Joss Whedon can. He's worked enough in TV where you kind of have to adapt your style that I think we'll end up with a cohesive movie. But it's not that the fate of the DC and extended universe is in peril. It's the direction of it is now up in the air, because the grounding force has been Zack Snyder. And for better or for worse, whether you liked it or not, but now it's going in a different direction. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is The Nut Job 2, opens on August 11th.
You scared us, you cute little guy.
Don't call me cute!
Oh, got it.
My name is Mr. Fang. I was cursed with these big, adorable eyes and this fuzzy little body.
I need your help to take back the park.
This park has everything we need. Yeah!
But the mayor wants to destroy everything.
I got bigger plants and trees.
Park. They're gonna destroy the park.
I'll admit, I'm one of the few critics that actually liked the first Nut Job. I actually found that to be a pleasant surprise. For as many sort of low-rent, crappy animated films that are trying to be Pixar or trying to be DreamWorks and just kind of fail through the whole production, I thought that the Nut Job was kind of clever and it was cute. I mean, it wasn't the highest level of quality, but it was a nice, entertaining lark, and it came out like in January, so, you know, the standards are kind of low at that point. I enjoyed it, and this one actually looks kind of cute. That's Jackie Chan playing Mr. Fang, and Jackie Chan's Chinese, but the Nut Job was South Korean co-production. And then actually, if you watch that movie, you can see elements of that showing up, especially at the very end. Gangnam Style, I know, was an international hit, but it, you know, originated in South Korea, which was added in the credits with no explanation as to why they were doing Gangnam Style. And I find it interesting that it's showing a certain degree of Asian roots here, but it's going for that international voice cast with, of course, Jackie Chan. This could be awful, but I'm not dreading this. I've seen animated film trailers for stuff that look terrible, and this one looks like it might be a fun little lark for the kids. The next one I want to talk about is Wonder, which opens on November 17th.
My name is Augie Pullman. Next week, I start fifth grade. And since I've never been to real school before, I'm pretty much totally petrified. I've had 27 surgeries. They've helped me to breathe, to see, to hear without a hearing aid, but none of them have made me look ordinary.
Look at his face. I've never seen anything that ugly in my life.
Why are you sitting here then? Because I want some nice friends for a change. Me too.
All right, now this looks like exactly the kind of movie that would come out right around November, where it's something that's going for award season and going pulling for the heartstrings and everything. And you can't see it on the radio, but it's about this kid who's had massive facial reconstruction and surgery, and he does not look, for lack of a better term, normal. And it looks like it's got that very deliberate emotional underpinning. And it's going to be an easy sell to parents because everybody's child gets picked on at some point. So any parent can get behind this movie. What I fear about this is by putting somebody like Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson in the movie, that it might lay it on too thick. Sort of like with Collateral Beauty last year, which had many other problems, but it was so the movie that pulls your heartstrings. So this looks like if it's at least done with an even hand, and the kid looks like he's a pretty good actor and has a good screen presence and very relatable, that's where it's going to hinge. It's not about the big actors in this. It's about the little kid. And hopefully they don't lay it on too thick, because honestly, this movie could be awful to watch just because it's too heavy-handed, but it could also be an inspiring little film. So we'll see in November when that comes out. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Lovers and a look back at Roger Moore.
Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Oppan Gangnam Style.
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Before we jump into the movie reviews, I want to touch on one piece of news that I talked about briefly in the previous segment, and that is the passing of Roger Moore. He died this week at 89. I have, over the years, watched the James Bond movies ever since they were coming out in theaters, and then I've talked about this before on the show. I watched, it was right when Skyfall was getting ready to open, I watched all the films with my kids. There were like 22 of them or something, and I've watched the entire series multiple times in my life, so I have a really good set on who plays Bond. And well, Roger Moore, he succumbed to cancer this week, and that's sad, but he lived a full life and had some real interesting outside of Bond performances. He played a caricature Bond version of himself as Roger Moore in the Cannonball Run, which I thought was always great for him being game to have a little bit of fun with something like that. He also played in Curse of the Pink Panther, where he was the attractive, good-looking version of Jacques Clouseau after facial reconstruction surgery, because they didn't have, it was after Peter Sellers died. And then, of course, he played in like the Spice World movie. So he's made some pretty weird and obscure choices over the course of his life, knowing that he was so tied to Bond, because he played him from 1973 until 1985, which is only 12 years, really, when you think about it. I mean, 12 years is a lot. But, I mean, hey, let's face it. How long has Robert Downey Jr. played Iron Man? He's played Iron Man for 9 years. He's only three short of Bond. So when Roger Moore was playing Bond, they were in absolute crank them out production. Every 2 years, you were getting another Bond film. And the only time they hiccuped on changing the thing at the end of the movie where they say that Bond will appear next in, they said he was going to be in, I think, For Your Eyes Only after The Spy Who Loved Me, but they went ahead and did Moonraker. They did Moonraker after The Spy Who Loved Me because Star Wars was such a big hit, they had to jump on that bandwagon. Because The Spy Who Loved Me came out in 1977, which is when Star Wars came out. Happy 40th anniversary, Star Wars, by the way. So they went for their space race Bond film. Now, here's the thing. I know there's a lot of people who will turn up their nose and be like, oh, of course, Sean Connery was the best Bond. Now, look, I'm going to speak in defense of Roger Moore as James Bond. First of all, he's the first actor to have played James Bond who's passed away in terms of sort of like the main Eon production series. But the other thing I think a lot of people don't realize is he was originally considered for the role of James Bond. Now, Ian Fleming liked David Niven, who ironically played him in Casino Royale in 1967. But Niven was way too old at that time. But Roger Moore was much more that classic Bond style, the more reserved, the very slick gentleman spy, very attractive. Sean Connery was a little more rugged and a scoundrel. And while that works in the films, and I there's nothing wrong with Sean Connery's performance, the idea of Roger Moore as James Bond is a little more authentic than what most people think of James Bond being authentically Sean Connery. And also, I don't know if they actually offered the roles directly to Roger Moore first, but he certainly was considered. But he was doing The Saint at the time. He wasn't able to get out of that. He wouldn't have been able to get out of that. So that's why it went to Sean Connery. But he did fit that gentleman spy of Fleming's novel. Very well-dressed, very reserved, very attractive. He's also who I grew up with. And I found that people find their initial gut reaction to their favorite Bond is whoever they watched as a kid. I mean, I met a guy once and I mentioned asked him who his favorite Bond was. And he said that his favorite was Timothy Dalton, who did two films. But that's who he saw first. That's who James Bond was. And I remember it took me a long time as a kid when I would watch the old reruns of the James Bond movies to actually warm up to Sean Connery because I was so used to Roger Moore. I first saw him in Moonraker, and I watched all the way up to View to a Kill. And of course, then later on, I saw The Spy Who Loved Me and Live and Let Die and The Man with the Golden Gun. But he left this legacy of Pretty Boy Bond to Pierce Brosnan, who really emulated Roger Moore more than he did Sean Connery, a little more silly at times, a little more comical. But as much as people will complain about that, they forget that Sean Connery did plenty of goofy stuff as well. But it was Roger Moore that continued that franchise through the 70s and into the 80s, because let's look at it. Would Sean Connery's version of Bond in Diamonds Are Forever have been able to carry the movie into the 70s? I don't know. I really don't know, because Sean Connery was so done with the series at that time. And George Lazenby, if he had done more Bond films, which he dropped out because he thought it was too misogynistic of a series, would George Lazenby have been a decent Bond in further films, or would it have crashed and burned on his watch? I mean, the fact that it lasted that long, just chugging them out as formulaic as they were, it delivered to the audience what the audience wanted. And that's why I will always love Roger Moore as James Bond, and I consider him one of the best. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about The Lovers, jump into the movie reviews here. A late middle-aged married couple are each having affairs and unexpectedly rekindle their relationship when their estranged son comes to visit.
Are you seeing someone else?
You are so close to finally breaking free.
No, but I can't do it. The way I feel.
I've hardly seen you last week.
I've been overly occupied.
So you're screwing your wife now?
As if.
It must be love.
You're a coward, Michael. You need to tell her now.
Everybody knows I'm an idiot, all right? Come back, I'm a moron.
Tell her!
This is a smaller release, and it's released by A24, who always ends up outside of the mainstream. Now, this is a comedy. It's a dark comedy, and it has very sardonic humor to it. It's a comedy about cheating and affairs and infidelity. And why that becomes less shocking when you've been through the situation before. Anyone who's been married or has been in a long-term relationship understands that there are ups and downs. And there are times when you will fight, and there are times when you have go through a rough patch. And there's always plenty of time for the grass being greener on the other side. Now, if you've been married to somebody for so long, you've seen them at their worst. And if you're still married, it's because you're okay with that. But it's always nicer to have that excitement of having an affair. And that's kind of what's going on here. You got this married couple, and each one's having an affair with a younger person who is arguably sexier than who they're married to. But there is that realization that there's something taboo about this. That's what makes it exciting. And if that were ever to become humdrum, they would start looking around as well. It's a very bitter and dark look at relationships and marriage, but it's also wickedly funny at times. Deborah Winger plays the wife, and she's having an affair with a guy who's much better looking and sexier than her husband, but you also see where he's not always going to be the best. I mean, it's sort of like if you're good looking and sexy and different, there's a newness factor, but maybe you want something a little more similar, or maybe you want to rekindle something. On the same token, her husband's having an affair with a woman who's a dancer, who's very well in shape for her age, especially, but she's also kind of crazy. I mean, there's literally a scene where she hisses at hisses like a cat at somebody she's mad at. There's a thing with guys that they like the danger girls. They like the girls that you might find yourself in a tub of ice with your kidneys missing after a good night with them. Or you might wake up and find them stroking a wad of your hair like a cat that Blofeld would be stroking and wearing a necklace of human ears. That's the kind of person this woman is. She's kind of a loose cannon. And is it somebody you want to settle down with? I don't know. But look, this is the kind of movie that is going to be most appreciated by people who are in long-term relationships or in middle age, who understand what it's like to have the ups and downs of a relationship outside of the storybook tales. But overall, I enjoyed this. I thought it was very funny and entertaining. The Lovers rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, and Baywatch.
Because we can't go!
Oh.
Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue with the movie reviews with the big one for the weekend. That is Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man Tell No Tales. Will Turner's son is determined to break his father's curse, so he enlists Captain Jack Sparrow to find the legendary Trident of Poseidon to break the spell.
The dead have taken command of the sea. We're searching for Pearl, a girl, and a sparrow.
I have heard stories of a mighty Spanish captain who hunted and killed thousands of men.
No. Pirates.
I once knew a Spaniard named something in Spanish.
He's coming for you, Jack.
There's been an up and down ride with the Pirates. I thought the first Pirates movie was amazing. It was one of the, and it became a big hit because it deserved to. It was a great, fun movie. It was different. And in fact, if you think back to it, at the time, they almost didn't make that movie. It was taking a huge gamble to make Pirates of the Caribbean because just a couple of years before that, Cutthroat Island, which was Rennie Harlan's movie that starred Matthew Modine and Gina Davis, that movie was and still is considered one of the biggest box office bombs in terms of risk to return. It was like $90 million, which in the mid-90s is astronomical. And it like made like six. And so everyone ran away from pirate movies. And on top of it, you had Treasure Planet, which was based on Treasure Island, and it was a Disney movie, a very expensive animated film, a brilliant movie, by the way. It's great. In fact, I remember I met John Musker and Ron Clements, who directed that, and I said to him, I go, I loved Treasure Planet, and Ron Clements just sort of like, oh, you're the only one. I mean, that movie didn't click. I thought it was a fantastic movie. Check that one out if you ever have a chance. But it was a notorious bomb. So you had these two within the last decade of Pirates of the Caribbean coming out. These two very high-profile Pirates movies that bombed terribly. So when Pirates of the Caribbean came out, it was a big surprise. And then, of course, it did very well, and it was a very cohesive movie. Now, the sequels I didn't like because, well, I liked them. I thought they were fine. But the second one was kind of out there. And while it was the most popular and the biggest box office, I just didn't think it held together. And part of it's because they were writing the script on the set. And then the last one that they did in the trilogy, At World's End, just got very dark and heavy and morose, and it was like 3 hours long, and it was Gore Verbinski just loving himself on screen as much as possible because that guy has a real editing problem. Now, when they did on Stranger Tides like 5 years ago, I really enjoyed that. I was one of the people who was a big fan of that movie. Did not do terribly well in America. I mean, it did okay, but it was a huge hit overseas. Johnny Depp, as Jack Sparrow, tends to make a lot of money in places that aren't in the United States. And that's, I think, what Disney's banking on with this one. It's still going to do well. I think it's still going to be a big movie for the American audience, but they made this for the international audience because that's where the money comes from these films. Now, with that said, Johnny Depp is much more like the Jack Sparrow from the first three movies than the last one. So if you're a big fan of his portrayal, you get that. But he is sort of just runs around being drunk all the time. And that's funny. Ultimately, it's a very formulaic summer movie. It's got witty dialogue between the actors. It's got the big stars in it. It's got big set pieces that look great. In fact, I saw it in IMAX 3D. It looks fantastic. It really is a gorgeous movie just to watch, just for the action sequences alone, because it was, I believe, shot and mastered for the large format screens. And I really enjoyed what it had to offer. It was fun. It had good action. It had great the special effects are jaw-dropping, especially if you look back 14 years ago to the first one, which were great then, but this is even better. And it's nice to see people back. Like, you got Jeffrey Rush back as Barbossa. Of course, you got Jack Sparrow with Johnny Depp. And you've got the younger cast, the new cast, which I think if they're going to do any more of these, and it all depends on how much Johnny Depp has to pay Amber Heard in divorce fees, if they did more movies with this, I would just like to see just the one-off Jack Sparrow movie. Just let Jack Sparrow be a pirate. The biggest problem that this movie had was it keeps trying to tie it back to the original stories, and it could be Pirates of the Caribbean, could be about anything. In fact, I mean, there's talk about saying you can't do any of these without Johnny Depp, and I think that there's a certain truth to that. But if you have Johnny Depp, just have a totally different story, which is what On Stranger Tides was. But of course, you still have the characters keep showing up again. I enjoyed this. I mean, it's nothing groundbreaking or totally memorable, but for a big budget escapist Memorial Day blockbuster, it's totally fun. I didn't feel bored. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes, so it's not as long as like At World's End. But it's just a fun movie. I enjoyed it. I came out of it enjoying myself. I was happy when I left, and I wasn't disappointed. So I'm going to have to say that Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Baywatch. An upstart swimming Olympian down on his luck joins an elite lifeguard team to fight drug dealers near the beach.
Welcome to Baywatch. Our team is the elite of the elite.
We're staring into the abyss here. It's up to us to restore the Baywatch brand.
Hey, One Direction, you here for the qualifiers?
I'm Matt Brody. I don't have to try out. I've got 2 gold medals.
Training begins at 0600.
What is it that you think we do here?
Prevent people from getting sunburned, occasionally stop them from drowning.
Drugs, murder, dead body on our beach. We're going to have to do what Baywatch does best.
Full disclosure, I've actually never watched an entire episode of Baywatch. I'm sure at points I've watched parts of one. I remember my wife, when we were in college, she liked the show. So she'd watch it. I think occasionally I came in when she was, you know, into her dorm room or at the lounge where people are watching. I'm sure I've seen bits and pieces of the episodes, but I don't know anything about the characters or the story. I mean, I've watched the people running around in slow motion, bouncing on the beach. Sure. So I don't come with any sort of pre-knowledge to this. It's not like when they did Chips a couple weeks ago where I'd watch Chips and I'm like, this totally doesn't feel like Chips. It's ruining it. So I don't know if this is at all close to what Baywatch was. I don't know if it hits that mark. But I mean, taking it as just a pure movie, I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to do the 21 Jump Street thing, where 21 Jump Street was a TV show that was arguably almost a family show for like teenagers to watch with their parents back in the late 80s and early 90s. And gave it an R-rated raunchy treatment, and it worked, and it was hilarious. The problem with Hollywood is when you do something once, they want to do it again for everything else, and that's why they tried to do it with Chips and failed. They tried it with this, but it's clear they're just trying to make it raunchy. If you can just edit out a couple references and one or two scenes and then remove all the swearing, it could be a PG-13 movie. It doesn't feel like it's integrated into the film. It's just like they said, well, let's go ahead and make it R, and let's just have everybody drop F-bombs here and there. And a lot of times you can notice that they're looping the lines. For those who don't know what that means in the rest of the world, looping is where they re-record it. And they sometimes will, it sounds like they added extra dirty jokes and added extra swearing to beef up the R rating, which isn't how you do an R-rated movie. You do an R-rated movie by saying, we're going to make an R-rated movie and we're going to make jokes of it. And so there are these scenes, like there's an opening scene where this guy gets, well, let's just say it's very similar to a scene in There's Something About Mary, where a guy gets his twig and berries caught in something. And it's meant to be outrageous, but it's out of place because it really feels like they filmed it later and just kind of crammed it in there and then threw in a reference here and there. It also, the cast, they're not given much to work with. Zac Efron's fine and The Rock's fine, but they have no chemistry together. And the rest of the cast is the bad guy, which is this woman. I believe she's Indian. She's not very exciting as a bad guy. She doesn't strike me as a particularly thrilling bad guy. You've got Alexandria Daddario as one of the Baywatch lifeguards, and while yeah, she looks great in a bikini, I like watching her run on the beach too. But her character has nothing, offers nothing to the movie. And they've got this model, I don't even know her name, but she plays CJ Parker, which is, of course, Pamela Anderson's character. And she's gorgeous, and she bounces around, but man, she's a terrible actor. And just not funny. The chemistry between the people they put together doesn't work. The jokes are half-baked. It just doesn't feel cohesive as a movie at all. It really feels like it was the studio just throwing stuff together, telling this guy to do it. And then the guy who directed, he did movies like Horrible Bosses, which was great. But this one is just awful. I mean, it's the worst you can do with a comedy because it's not funny, and it doesn't even work as an action movie. It just misses the mark on pretty much everything. So Baywatch totally sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the weekly box office and the home cinema roundup featuring My Life as a Zucchini. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue the show. And I'll talk about some box office and some DVDs and Blu-rays that are available. But first, I want to talk about something that we do every time that there's a long weekend or a holiday. And, you know, of course, we spend the time, you know, honoring the people that it's for. I mean, obviously, we got Memorial Day coming up. And Memorial Day is a time for us to remember our fallen. So outside of the historical context, we as a family always trying to do something to bond as a family. And one of the things that we do over the course of these long weekends is we have movie marathons, and we're doing one this weekend. It's evolved that we do a 24-hour science fiction marathon. We started at noon one day and go all the way to noon the next day. And this is based on these science fiction marathons and horror movie marathons I'd go to when I was a kid in high school and college and even into my 20s, and now I take my kids. And I found that these are great ways to bond with your kids. One of the things that you run into when the kids start getting outside of just little kids, teenagers, preteen even, you got to kind of search for a way to bond with your children, and movies are a great way to do it. The only thing is you have to have a focus to it, and you have to have an agreement on it. And one of the things I like to do as a parent and as a film critic is I like to expand my kids' horizons. Now, once they get to be 15, 16 years old, they go watch their own movies, they check out what they want to on Netflix. But when they're like 9 or 10, you know, sometimes it's nice to show them more than what they would necessarily just gravitate towards, more than just cartoons or movies that are only 5 years old. So we do science fiction over the course of Memorial Day weekend, and we do over the course of Labor Day weekend, we do horror. And a couple tips if you were ever going to do this for your own kids, because I wanted to share this with people because it's a great way to bond as a family. The first thing you want to do is pick a theme. You can do science fiction or horror. You can do genre. You can do comedy. We did an 80s marathon over the long holiday week for 4th of July once, where it was all these classic 80s movies. We even showed stuff like The Breakfast Club and This is Spinal Tap. So stuff that's a little bit different, not something that they would immediately watch. And of course, you got to know your kids because both those movies, I believe, are rated R. So you got to know what's appropriate for your children. The very first one I ever did was all the James Bond movies with the kids over 4th of July weekend back in 2012. We've done Star Trek. We watched all the Planet of the Apes movies once. We watched all the Star Wars. We did a Lucasville marathon where we watched all the Star Wars movies and the Indiana Jones movies and stuff like Labyrinth and The Dark Crystal and Willow. If you pick a theme, you got to watch all of them. You got to watch it as completely as possible. Yes, in the Planet of the Apes series, there's some stinkers in there. But you got to watch them all just so the people that are watching it get a context for everything. If you're going to watch all the Bond movies, watch them all. Don't skip the one that you're like, well, that's stupid. No, watch them all. And it teaches the kids to sit down and watch the movie. You also want to have a rule, no screens. You know, you're not going to have a kid playing games while they're watching a movie. But the other thing you do, if you're going to do this, pick a location. We do it in our basement, which is kind of set up as a rec room. We've decorated and everything over the years. It's a TV room, and it's away from the main TV of the house because that's where the main traffic area is. And if people come by or my wife's in the kitchen getting snacks ready or something, that's a distraction. If you're downstairs and you're in a secluded area, then you're forced to be with each other. Have a little bit of fun with it. You know, put up some decorations. I always make t-shirts. They're very easy to do. You can just print something, you know, make it on, you know, Photoshop, and you can print them out into iron-ons and just buy a cheap shirt at Walmart and iron it on, and boom, you got t-shirts that everybody can have. I always get like swag bags, little gifts, toys, you know, spend $20 at the dollar store, or, you know, at a paper party outlet type thing. And you can get, you know, there's little things that are theme oriented. You know, I remember I got little like fake squirt guns for the James Bond marathon. The big one is themed snacks. Have something special. Don't just have the kids getting pizza and popcorn. Have games and activities and crafts. When we did the Luke's Filmathon, I found online, because there's tons of stuff online for this, I found a way to make whips out of duct tape. We made Wookiee sock puppets at one point. We made stuffed animal sock monkeys for the Ape-a-thon. So there are a lot of ideas and crafts that you can get online. And then finally, the best way to really kind of make this special, throw in extra film bits. Trailers, shorts, cartoons. Don't just show the movies. Give a little bit of a pre-show. You can either stream it on YouTube, make a playlist for it, but you can watch trailers for different movies. You can have there like little shorts and cartoons and stuff that you can find on YouTube. That makes it special. If you do this, this is one way that you can bond with your kids. And it's a great way for families to have a united experience over the course of like a long weekend because everybody's home. It takes a little bit of planning, but it's totally worth it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I said that Alien Covenant, I pegged it for $45 million to win the weekend. It did not do that well. They were expecting it to do better. It only did $36 million, which was not very good. I mean, compare that to Prometheus. Prometheus, its opening weekend was 51. Prometheus was much more anticipated as an Alien sequel. I thought that some people who wanted just the prequel with an alien in it would be more interested in it, but I think it jarred a little bit too much with Prometheus. Prometheus wasn't what everybody wanted, and then this was Alien 3, you know, alien stuck on another planet. It had some interesting stuff, but it was not at all as exciting of a movie. Now, it costs less than Prometheus by, you know, more than 25%, but still, it's going to struggle. I mean, it'll probably make it up in the international box office, and we'll see what happens there because, of course, they want to do more. I was surprised at what a lower turnout in the box office it was. And everything did okay with almost $12 million, which actually isn't bad for a movie like that. But Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Long Haul, that one suffered a bit. That was at $7 million. I think part of the problem was the recast did not work as well. It made half of what the last Diary of a Wimpy Kid movie opened at, and even that one was about $10 million less than the other two. So this might be the end of that series. I don't know if we're going to get any more, which is a shame because it's a really charming book series. This week, you never know because you got this long weekend, and Pirates is kind of an unknown source because it does so well overseas. It's going to do well overseas. In the United States, maybe $80 million over the 4-day, which is good for Pirates. I mean, that's enough because it's just gravy at this point, what's going on in the overseas for the Pirates movies. That's where the money is. But Baywatch, people have been pushing that higher. I think originally people were thinking $50 million, and then it's been dialed back to 40, then dialed back to 35. I think maybe $30 million, because I don't think the word of mouth is going to be very good at this. Not just critics. I don't think that audiences are going to be all that thrilled with it. And you might just see it dial back as people go back and rewatch like Guardians of the Galaxy. Or there's a lot of stuff to choose from this week because of the stuff that came out in May. So there's so many options out there that Baywatch is something a little bit different than a lot of the stuff that's offered out there. But, you know, Snatch didn't do very well. I don't see this one doing much better than Snatch. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The spotlight this week is on My Life as a Zucchini. A troubled child ends up in an orphanage where he makes new friends and comes to terms with problems in his life.
I'm going to take you to a really nice place with other kids who have no mom or dad. This little man is Ikar.
My name is Zucchini.
More like a potato with that head.
Zucchini. We're all the same. There's no one left to love us.
Hey, new kid, what'd you do to land in here?
This girl, what's she like?
She has eyes that go right through you.
This one is best known for being nominated for an Oscar for animation. Now, of course, I'm not in the Academy. I'm in some other groups, but I didn't get to see this early. Now, this is a French film, actually, that's been redubbed in English, which is relatively easy to do with, it's claymation. So, you know, you don't have an exact match on the mouth anyways. that did not win, but I always like to keep these on my radar because I love animation. And I also love different versions of animation, not just computer-generated films, which everybody can do now. I love the fact that they went back and they were doing stop motion. Now, it's not as refined and as perfect as Laika, because that stuff's amazing, but it is still very charming to watch. It's very French because it's very dark. It's rated PG-13, appropriately so for some sex comments and some dark subject matter. So I don't know if it's necessarily appropriate for the youngest kids, but it's told from the kid's perspective about, you know, this kid's in an orphanage, and he has a really troubled past. There's no saving grace. There's no superhero coming in to save things. And that's why I'm saying it's French, because it just deals with the emotion and, you know, sometimes it's dreariness of our lives. Oh, that's my terrible French accent. But it works, and there is a certain amount of optimism there. And as absurd as it can get sometimes, it's also very grounded in reality. And it's this at times charming and at sometimes heartbreaking story about these kids who have very, very big problems trying to work them out as kids. And it doesn't have a magic solution, but it does persevere. And that's one of the reasons why I thought this movie was great. So I'm going to have to say My Life as a Zucchini totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Other new releases this week, you can check out Logan, of course, Get Out. You've got The Great Wall, but that's it for this week. I need to go, and when I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Wonder Woman and Captain Underpants, which might be the same person. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.